from a business standpoint, can you break down what the business or the economics of a PMS, the PMS world looks like? So everybody kind of understands the dental models, right? And how they grow and EBITDA and all those kind of things. Welcome to another episode of Dental Marketing Theory. I'm your host, Gary Bird. And today we have a special treat because I get to talk to somebody who's super smart. And he, I've actually gotten to speak on stage with him before, and he is a big brain, and I am really, really excited about the conversation that we get to have. Mr. Kiltesh is the CEO and founder of Tab32, and that is a PMS in the dental industry. And if you know anything about this industry, it's a very, very unique industry, and there's tons of opportunities. And I believe that Kiltesh has a lot of the answers around how to move forward as an industry, because the backbone of a dental office is the practice management software. So Kiltesh, thank you so much for coming on today. I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
Likewise, Gary. Pleasure. And thank you so much for an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So walk me through, why'd you end up, as I said before, there's a lot of opportunities out there in the world. Mm-hmm. How did you end up in the dental industry and focusing on a practice management software?
So I'll take a bit of a long shot, give you a long shot journey of mine. Started my career in big data and used to work with Honda Motors reverse engineering, CAD/CAM, back when, you know, CAD/CAM mill was not even a possibility. This is very, very early 1990 and early 2000, right? And since then, I've been into healthcare for a long time. And then lately, you know, before starting Tab32, I'd been in San Diego Supercomputer working on genomics and research, translation science, basically. And since then, I came into dental. And the reason that I came was while I was pursuing my business degree, what happened was that, it's the area where I was looking into few things, and dental being among them, where I felt that where can I make most impact? And that's how I came into a foray of dental. And I felt that how can we make a change that would help in an industry where about 40% of the people do not even receive the care that is needed. Only 50 to 60% of the people receive a care because they are sitting on some kind of plan or some government agency helping them. So how can we really make this possibility? And when I looked a little further into it, I found that data was all siloed, all under the desk of the providers for the most part. All the treatment, any continuity of the care was out of question. So the big problem that if you do not understand the data that the way it should you understand from the insights out of it, then you can't really build a comprehensive solution. And one of the other tenets that the dental, it is the way it is organized and structured, is that it's more geared towards retail industry than more of an healthcare, like a primary care, because insurances are way different. I wouldn't want to go into necessarily details of it. But that being said, you know, there was that opportunity where I felt that we could make a macro level disruptive changes bring to the dentistry. And that's where, you know, whole of this journey came in. And I felt that let me first liberate the data, and which is where, you know, practice management came in. And obviously, you know, following that practice management, you know, we felt that care continuum can only be addressed if we can provide a continuous journey and help reach out to patient at every which way, either it be a digital or either it be a physical inside the office. So that's the long story short of why, what I did, what I did. And it's really an exciting time that now we have done it and 5 years into it or 6 years into it.
Yeah. So 6 years ago. So tell me a little bit about when you got started, because there was with 6 years ago when you started, who had most of the market share at that time? Was it Dentrix?
So I technically started 10 years ago. It took me 3.5 years to just build the platform to really sell the first copy.
Wow.
Right. And I knew that it was an uphill challenging task because building a practice management will not be an easy. So I took that route. When I looked at the market at the time, the dominating platforms were antiquated basically at the time itself, like 10 years, if you still rewind and look at the market, you would see that they were still using mostly in-house or in-premise systems, which really created this issue of siloing the data or hiding the data, right? So that's where I started, I believe, and that's one of the major TNets that I started, addressing at the very onset. And it's technically about 10 years, like I said, and 6 years when we sold our first copy. And since then, it's an amazing journey year over year.
How much has your software changed since that first copy to what you have now?
So I would say that, there are two things here, right? One is obviously the timing of our starting, because when we started, it was the time that really the cloud computing took place. And, about 10 years ago, Amazon came up with their, but it was nothing more than a hosted services. But last 5-7 years, it has been really truly a cloud technology. You know, there are tiers of technology like infrastructure, platform, and services, right? So platform has really matured mm-hmm. from this cloud services. And we have, I would say that we have built truly an infrastructure that can scale over the cloud, and product has matured over the period of time significantly. I'd say that first 3 years, Gary, we spent a lot of time building a software that would work for generally a practice standalone or a solo practice, right? And then last 3 to 4 mm-hmm. years, we yeah. have worked our way up into building a enterprise platform that would really cohesively address the DSO need or an enterprise need very strategically from, if you're talking about data or if you're talking about the way they handle their books in terms of accounting, or the way they clinicians manage, or the way, those central billing processes and centralization processes work. So anyways, I mean, that's...
Got it.
So it's a tremendous change.
So where do you... That's a huge change.
Yeah.
So now, what... And just for the audience, and help us understand, why is it important that the information's in the cloud versus not in the cloud?
Well, so it's... there are a few things, right? Why it should be on the cloud is... Not so much so that I would think anyone should not think that cloud is a solution to not having in-premise server, right? But the way people should think is, how can a cloud be leveraged to create efficiency, scale, and growth? That's how one should start looking at the cloud, right? Given what it is given, number one, or I would say there are tiers of way to evaluate. So if you were a single location, small practices, and if you were to start today, or if you are at a time where your refresh cycle of hardware and software has just come in, right, then it is for you to decide that, hey, should I continue investing in this hardware storage, HIPAA compliance for 7 years of data, right? Or should I put it on the cloud? That can be your first level one marker. The level two marker is basically when you start scaling it, right? So how do you really scale an infrastructure when you're looking at 50 locations, right? So how can you get the efficiencies of economies of scale and scope, really, right? So that is when really truly cloud comes into play. And also more subtly, I would want to say that merely by taking your in-premise system and hosting it on the cloud doesn't buy you anything. It is this, basically you are saying that I've taken my under the desk system and put it on the cloud, but you have all the limitations that it still existed before, right? So that's not a real answer. Then the answer is you really need to find a solution that would truly work in a cloud infrastructure and not just as a hosted solution or a web 1.0 solution. Does that help really getting?
Yeah, most definitely. So walk me through. So I'm a practice. I have 5 locations. I'm currently on a hard drive, right? I'm not in the cloud.
Right.
So I get what you're saying, but like what are the advantages for me to even begin to consider moving to the cloud? And let's say it's Tap32. So if I'm meeting with Tap32, what are you going to walk me through to help me understand on how to scale my practice? Because I'm only at 5. I want to go to 20 over the next couple of years. How are you going to help me manage my data in a way that's going to help me do that?
Right. So that's an amazing point that you make, Gary, right? You said that I have 5. I want to go to 20, right, in next year or two. So what I would first ask is, what's your business plan look like, right? How do you scale that business plan? Where are your costs involved, right? So there are 2 or 3 areas which are very heavy in terms of resources, okay? One is a front desk, which is you also come into play from a marketing side of it, right? Which you do an amazing job.
Your lead gen
does an amazing, amazing job at it, right? So one, that is where resource intensive things happen and how can you really scale that part, right? And the part 2 is at the back end of the offices, can you scale it more effectively and efficiently because there are resources involved, either it be a billing efforts or either it be a revenue cycle management efforts or even it may be a collection efforts that could happen, right? So how do you really now take this 5 to 20 and create an efficient scale? Because what, keep in mind, you know, us as an entrepreneur have been told that 1 million problem to a 5 million problem to a 10 million problem to a 50 million and 100 million, all these problems are different. They are not going to scale as it is, right? Similarly applies within the industry as well. 5 practice problem to a 20 practice problem is significantly different, and 20 to a 50 is again very different challenge, right? So do not think that what you did for 5 will also get you to the 20, right? Absolutely, right?
100%.
So that is where you need to start thinking about this thing. So it's not so much about Tap32 or whatever, right? I want them to understand that where they are going with this, what they would need in that journey. Yeah, sure, tier 1 is a hardware replacement cost versus this and that. But then what are additional revenue, cost intensive efforts that we can help them create more efficiencies around it, right? That's how I would present if it makes sense from a DSO's perspective.
So just so I understand it, because I'm not in a dental office, so I'm thinking about my front desk, which is how new patients flow in, and that can become... There's never been a successful office without successful front desk, right?
Yeah,
no one picks up the phone. No one is scheduling people. You can't. It's the top end of your funnel, so to speak, if you're just looking at the office itself. And then you're saying the back end, how are we going to scale the back end of the office? And that's, when you say the back end of the office, are you talking more about how the team interacts with each other?
So,
are you talking about the team and the patient interaction?
So let me do 2 things, right? One, let me describe the workflow of a 5 practice, right? Then let's say we'll describe the workflow of 20 practice. So if I were a 5 practice, right, I would VPN into 1 practice, right? Look at the data, do all the job, right? If some information is missing, I would do all of those things, either work with practice, call with practice, do whatever processes, get that job done. I'll do that for 5 times, right? That kind of efficiency, you can accomplish a little by centralizing it, right? But now, if I give you a 20-location DSO or a 20-location group, are you telling me that you are going to accomplish the same efficiency at a computer-by-computer VPNing into it? I'll tell you that there is a loss ratio there. So most likely, you are not even linear. You are increasing your cost in an exponential way. It's not going to scale up as you were thinking that, oh, I scaled up my file, let me go to 20. That is what I meant, really, you know, how you think about this, right?
Yeah. Okay, I totally. That makes it. Okay, and so, and then with the cloud, with the, what you guys offer at Tab 32 is that solves that problem, right? I'm not having to log into every single.
Exactly. It solves this problem of efficiency where the, you know, especially even today, right? It's not about efficiency in terms of labor force, but it's like shortage of labor force that we are facing after the COVID and the cost escalation that is happening, right? It is absolutely like critical for DSO to really maintain its margin and EBITDA numbers or valuations, right? It's absolutely, you know, required to fight with this high inflation to centralize this stuff. And not only to centralize this, Gary, but now also find a way that I don't have a labor force inside. So can I find an outsourcing labor force in another country, if at all, right? So if that has to happen, then if you're not sitting on a right stack of technology, right, then you are looking at this problem even more pronounced than anything else, right?
Yeah. So it's kind of like when COVID hit and nobody was ready to have telehealth meetings. And all of a sudden everybody scrambled to do telehealth. Both the vendors tried to offer it and the offices tried to do it. And it was a hot mess, right? Like everybody was trying to do it, but you just weren't ready for it. And so now what I'm hearing you say is now we're facing a labor shortage where, unlike other times, and there's opportunities to offshore a lot of this work, but your infrastructure is not prepared to support that if you're not set up properly. And so that's a huge advantage. If you can offset, if you can have somebody who's making $2 an hour instead of $14 an hour, and you can reduce the times that they have to do it. So instead of doing it 20 times, they only have to do it once to update everything. That's such a massive swing in cost. Now, a lot of people do you feel that a lot of offices even realize the redundancies that they're experiencing in the softwares, or do they not notice it because the ones that are making decisions about it aren't actually doing it?
See, what has happened, I think, let me give you one more pronounced example that would really, really, you know, nail this thing. You are a call center with 50 locations. Imagine what will happen if you have to VPNing when a patient calls in and you have a call center offshore or onshore. What happens now? It's going to be a real nightmare, right? So that's the kind of situation even at the back end. And cost is more pronounced because more you don't collect, it is more expensive than setting up an appointment because you are increasing your cash flow cycle time, okay? That is basically a killer because that requires a DSO to raise more money at a higher interest rate because their collection cycle time is longer, right? So anyways, that being said, coming to your point here, I feel that from the entire application, if your technology is not really ready, then you could really, you know, problems are going to change. Sometimes it is teledentistry, sometimes it is labor problem, sometimes it's going to be something else that you and I can't really think through right now, right? Because that's the change dynamics of the macro level of market that then comes into our day-to-day life, right? How do you prepare for this thing? How do you prepare for this thing, right? So idea to prepare for this thing is more proactive than reactive. If you try to go and do teledentistry after, right, rather than saying, oh, I might already have a video conferencing platform, or if you already had a cloud solution, right, you would have better chances of saying, oh, let me go and find outsourcing team who can help me on this particular function, rather than saying, oh, let me now go update my technology. If my technology gets updated, then I'll do the outsourcing, right? It's two, three times more longer of a cycle. And obviously in this situations, it becomes difficult for business, right, to sustain. And
this is why so many DSOs feel stuck. And this is why so many DSOs feel stuck, right? They kind of figure out kind of late in the game that, whoops, we built this the wrong way. Exactly. And it's this circle, this massive circle.
See, you can do a portfolio. Finance is a portfolio theory, right? So you can build your portfolios by assembling the set of assets, 1, 2, 3, same, right? And say, I'm going to do an EBITDA multiplier, right? But that EBITDA multiplier is not going to give you an efficiency. That's just a financial mechanism based on the macro of the economy. Either EBITDA is higher multiple or lower multiple, and you have to give it at 5 or 7 years of equity churn rate. So that is really what is happening right now. But if you really take that extension to further, you really need an efficiency from that perspective to really scale your DSO to be more sustainable. And that is where I feel like people need to start understanding this aspect, that it's a multi-pronged situation where you need to be more proactive and not just think about putting DSOs as a portfolio theory where you are just assembling set of a group of assets together. That may work in a short run, but once you reach 50 or 100, you know, to scale up to that 1,000, probably, which is what you might be thinking of, right? The next Heartlands and Smile brands, then that needs to be done, right? Because do you have 30, yeah. 40 years that it took for Heartland? Or how many years do you have really the cycle time to get there?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So, okay, so I want to change. And as I told everybody, Kotesh is super smart. So the things that he's laying out for you, he's literally laying the roadmap for you of what things are going to look like in the future. And I want to move to that. So where do you see PMSs moving, and what should the future look like to help us scale our practices the way that we want? How does that look and feel from your perspective?
So I believe that PMS are moving in a right direction. I believe that we are leading that pack in terms of innovation the way it should be. People should not merely think that I want to replace my Dentrix or Eaglesoft. People should think more of an efficiency when they are replacing it, and how can I accomplish the front end, back end, clinical functions more efficiently is what they should think about. And that is where all the PMSs are working towards. I feel that my sincere thoughts are that we are leading this pack. We are making industry move, because if you just rewind 5 years ago, you would buy PMS, but then you have to go buy 5 more products to make that happen. Now, at least you see one invoice and 5 products in there. So people are trying to buy those companies, or you will have one product and make the function work for your practice, right? So at least I feel that people are consolidating those functions, which are really minimum required for a dental practice to operate. And obviously there will be functions that cannot be consolidated, but obviously that's the beauty of the market, right? Where you come up with an multi-pronged approach where complementing functions could come into play, right? But everything cannot be complementary. You need to have a base platform for rest of it to complement and work well with it. Does that help laying it out?
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really good. So now, where do you, from a business standpoint, can you break down what the business or the economics of a PMS, the PMS world looks like? So everybody kind of understands the dental models, right? And how they grow and EBITDA and all those kind of things. And we know that there's pressures on the dental industry right now in unique ways. And some are unique, some aren't. In the marketing world, there's certain pressures and there's certain things that we are restrained by and certain things that motivate us to move forward. Help us understand from the back end of a PMS company, what's the strain that the PMSs are under right now from an economic standpoint that may be holding us back or not moving as fast as we want?
I believe PMS strains are not from tech enabling it, probably some from tech enabling it, because some of the PMS, even though cloud, are still trying to update the technology. But more problem, I feel, is not so much from a tech itself, but it is of change management. And the factor of change management is difficult because you're not merely replacing a Dentrix as a platform or as a practice management rather, but you are thinking more holistic and trying to build a solution. And really that creates a learning and change that is more of an adoption situation. And I feel that technology also so far, right, has been over-promised, under-delivered. And that is changing now, but it's was happening at least for last 3, 4, or 5 years that I have seen industry enough that technology had to catch up. And it's still catching up, many of this. So yeah. I do see the acceleration.
Oh, yeah, me too. So why do you think that change management is so slow to be adopted in dental?
It's not dental. It's general healthcare. So if you think about broader healthcare, it has nothing to do as such. Healthcare by nature of the way it is in terms of regulated industry and people that work within that industry. If you take physicians market, if you take OBGYN market, if you take vision market, right? Some of those have more prominent change management requires versus some have lower end of it. We are somewhere in between that, right? So it's not that bad, I feel. What I feel the blessing in disguise so much is that this high inflation, tight labor market and contracting economy, in fact, would push this further. And that would accelerate this movement into adopting the new technology. Because when your staff, half of your staff is not working, right? Or you don't have a staff to replace, that is where, you know, this is going to accelerate because that becomes a do or die situation, right? So if you take Affordable Care Act, if you remember 10 years ago or 12 years ago, rather.
Yeah.
Affordable Care
Act. Where they rolled out the website. They spent like $10 billion and
built the website. Under the meaningful use, right? Tried to incentivize the providers to adopt electronic mechanisms. And that incentive worked in a way, right? In our case, in the dental, the problem is a survival problem. If you want to grow and scale, right? Especially for the competitive DSOs that are in the industry, how do you do that? It is all about integration, centralization, and outsourcing. And if you want to do integration, centralization, outsourcing, the only mechanism is to leverage the technology. That is going to accelerate the whole change management.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. And then if we were to roll this out, if you're kind of where you're building the roadmap that you're building TAP32 on, what are some of the features and things that you're trying to, not even just features, but just like the future of how offices are going to interact with your platform? What does that look like in your vision, like as an entrepreneur, 5 years, 10 years down the road? How is that going to change and be so much different and as things start to accelerate with the technology?
So a couple things. One being that it will be efficient, more efficient in terms of the workforce required within the practice. That is number one, right? So how can a dental practice be more competitive in a industry where margins are shrinking, right? That's the underpinning there. So how technology can come in. So examples of that could be kiosk, which we are seeing like version ones of it, right? Kiosk and other things, we are seeing version ones of it, but it will be much more matured in 5 years if you think about it, right? So on and so forth.
So you're talking about like when I go to McDonald's in Europe, I just go to a board, I hit the what sandwich I want, and then it spits it out on the thing. I don't ever even talk to a human.
Right. Well, so that's the idea, right? Like an Amazon checkout, online checkout, whatever, right? So I guess that experience has to improve because consumers' expectations are not going to go down. It's only going to scale, go up from here. So we have to catch up. And that's going to happen. But that's where, you know, big change, where I think the biggest winner here is a consumer. And patient's experience or customer experience will be at the center if you take, you know, or rewind 5, 10 years, right? So that's one part of it. where I feel technology is going to make a huge impact. And obviously, the second part is more ongoing operations. How can you create more efficient operations? How can you move the data around? How can you leverage, you know, like new patients? Because again, you know, think of this, internet technology is going to be 10 times different, not even 5 times in 5 years, or 10, 20 yeah. times different. How do you really cope up with that, right? So I think the biggest thing for me to really say, Gary, is that can we, it is the data standardization that is going to move us forward, because that is going to be the critical component for us as an industry to come together. You cannot hoard the data, which is happening right now. I feel that more standardization when it comes, it will really, really shift the dynamics. And that would really be the takeaway in next 5 years. And which is what, you know, we are working towards it, is that can we standardize this data across the board, irrespective of your practice management, right? So that's
got it.
We are headed to.
What topics did we not cover that you think would be useful to our audience?
So I guess we can talk a little bit about standardization, right? Because that I feel will help the audience a little more. The reason we are very big on standardization, Gary, is that look, the data has been sitting under the desk, which I started with this conversation. We really need to open up that data, and it cannot be black boxed anymore. And we are taking several initiatives on this front, Gary. Next year, you will hear, early next year, actually, you will hear a lot from us about that, where we really want to work with industry and give them in something that really says, hey guys, this is the way we feel that we have learned over the last 10 years and we want to share our learning. So hopefully people can leverage that model, right? And really make it even more global, take it, you know, version 2.0, 3.0, right? But I feel we have really discovered that, and we feel that we can really get there if we accelerate and come together as an industry.
So help the audience understand what that means exactly, though, because right in I'm gonna make a statement, and you can tell me if it's too strong. So right now, a lot of the PMSs act and move as if they own the data and it's their data, but in reality, it's the actual. And then the office thinks, why can't I get my data? I want this data to be able to work on. In reality, it really belongs to the patient. And am I getting this right?
You are absolutely hitting the nail at the right smack in the center. It is absolutely what it is. Two things. One is about structure of the data, Gary, which is how do you organize the data, right? Even within the same practice management, in legacy practice management, there have been different meanings of a data, even though I might be using the same practice management, right? So that is something.
Or I might be putting numbers in one way into one field, and you're using the same field, but you're putting a different number because you have a different interpretation of it. That happens all the time in practice management softwares in the same office.
Absolutely. That is the point, right? So that is the design and structure of the data, which is the big problem that we are addressing. And second problem that we are addressing is just liberating the data. So how can somebody connect and get their data if they need to in the easiest possible way? Can we have iPhone health app, right? And the patient owns its data on its phone, right? So I guess that's where we are headed to. And that's where I feel that we can make a huge impact, by liberating that and really, really making sure that, because there are other benefits, Gary. It is beyond the context of practice management. There are a lot more benefits if we did a cohesive work together for larger causes, I guess. That's where our head is at least.
Could you give me an example of like another industry that's kind of figured this out? I know that like when Elon came out with his electric cars and his battery packs, he made those open source. Is that similar to what you're talking about, or are you talking about something different?
Well, it's similar. So I'll tell you, we don't have to go to even other industry. We have it within ours. The FHIR and HL7 are very primarily the data structure and standards. even the architectures of the document that people exchange in the primary healthcare and the healthcare generally, right? Dental doesn't necessarily do all of those things because our revenue cycle is a tenth of complex, right? Like very little complexity and very few billing codes that we are dealing with. So given that, we have a chance of building that model even better and simpler for people to leverage, right? So that's where I'm going towards, that we need to build that model out. Everybody needs to contributing to that model, and we can make it better from there, right? So that's where I'm headed towards, if it makes sense, right? And yeah, you don't really have to go even outside of our industry. We have it within. It's just, how can we apply it to dental and how can we simplify it for dental? Because keep in mind that our budgets are significantly lower than compared to a larger healthcare, right? Because they are almost like a 10th or 20th of the cent of the GDP, basically. We are not, right? So our budgets are smaller. So we need to keep that in reference in mind. And how can you really create then a architecture, design, and scalability around that concept that everyone can use it? So Gary, if I gave you a schematic standard structure and it said, hey, here is your X PMS system and queries, go do it, right? You should be able to do that, right? That's an idea behind that.
That's awesome. Where, if someone wants to learn more about what you guys are doing or see if Tab32 is right for them, how can they reach out to you?
So a couple of things. We have our website, www.tab32.com. Any form that you fill out there, which is of an interest to you, our sales marketing team will reach out and you can call as well. There is a number as well on the site for them to call.
Awesome. Well, great job today. I really appreciate you coming on and I look forward to talking again in the future.
Pleasure speaking with you, Gary. Pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much and appreciate this opportunity, my friend.